You're listening to episode 10 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
David, it's been a whole week. It's good to talk to you again about one of our favorite topics. And we've got a bunch of subjects lined up for this episode, don't we?
Yeah, 1 week went awfully fast. I just got back from Canada visiting my family for Thanksgiving. But we should really get back on the ball, and I guess that we should go over the topics like the Zephyr high-altitude pseudo-satellite. As I said, it stays up almost as long as the government in the United States shuts down. We have lethal autonomous robots or drones, or Skynet is finally here. Policy recommendations that make UAVs safe for civilians, or the rules for Skynet to operate. The X-47B wins an award. The aircraft approved Skynet is on its way. And on a lighter note, we have a mother hen and friendly chicks as UAVs. So I guess we should get started, huh, Max?
Sounds like a great lineup. You ready to go?
I'm ready. Let's go.
All right, our first item comes from UAS Vision. Solar-powered, high-altitude, pseudo-satellite, successful test flight.
Say that five times fast.
It's difficult, isn't it? Astrium, which is actually part of EADS, they've successfully completed a test flight of this Zephyr, which is a high-altitude, pseudo-satellite, or HAPS. There's another acronym, David. We should start a dictionary or something. I think we'd fill it up pretty quick.
I haven't quite figured out about a pseudo-satellite yet, but I get the point. So, I mean, HAPS is another one we'll add to the dictionary, and maybe, yeah, we should put something up on the website.
Now, this is solar-powered, and it holds the world record for flight endurance more than 2 weeks at altitudes above 70,000 feet. And as the pseudo-satellite name suggests, the idea is that this is a UAV that can act as satellites do, at least for some applications.
Yeah, basically, it's a relay. You're putting an aircraft in order airborne for a minimum of 2 weeks. Perfect use would be disaster areas, getting something over a tornado-ripped area or where they've taken out all the cell towers and stuff, and you put this over orbit, and it can act as a relay for all the cell phones. And it's solar-powered, so it's quiet, and 2 weeks is a long time for one airplane to be airborne.
Sure.
And they're expecting it to be longer.
And at those altitudes, it's actually up in the stratosphere. And, of course, that's above any weather influences and certainly air traffic. So I think it probably would have pretty much free reign of those skies. The test took place at the Yuma Proving Ground in Arizona. In this aircraft, it's a T-tail. It's got two electric motors. It kind of looks a lot like a glider. You know what this thing really reminds me of, David, when I see this? It reminds me of the Solar Impulse.
And basically, I think Solar Impulse is a good starting point for it. I mean, the T-tail makes perfect sense because it gives you another field to put solar panels on.
Ah, sure,
so,
yes.
As well as the wings and across the fuselage. The battery-powered engines are really efficient, and at that altitude, it doesn't take a lot to push it. It's interesting, though, that the Ministry of Defense for the United Kingdom is actually looking at it as a ISR, which is intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. So you could have a full flight, an aircraft orbiting over an area, again, observing quietly in a range where most missiles can't reach to.
Well, this application of UAVs instead of satellites, we're seeing this show up in several different companies, several different efforts, and I think more than a few people are recognizing that this may be a way to provide capabilities that satellites currently do, but at a much, much lower cost. So, hey, great application.
Yeah, and we'll watch out for this because I have a feeling that 2 weeks is just the beginning for some of these orbiting satellites or pseudo satellites. That just doesn't work for me. We got to find a better name than that.
Okay.
I guess we should move on to, this article was from Defense One. Why America Wants Drones That Can Kill Without Humans. A LAR, or lethal autonomous robot, would take the human out of the equation when attacking, making the decision itself. And basically, we have a armed robot that will decide that that's the target and that's the one that needs to be taken out without any sort of interaction or pair of eyes from a human. Kind of funky, huh? And it's kind of a scary notion, huh, Max?
It is, and there is some controversy that surrounds it, but there are a couple of objectives I think they're trying to accomplish with this. One noted in the article is that if this kill system, in effect, were completely automated and thus taking out the human element, that it makes it a less emotional kind of a situation. They also talk about increased accuracy, more accuracy maybe in terms of targeting and so forth than a human operator. But one of the big things that I guess they're trying to address is this issue of collateral damage, which, of course, is problematic when it comes to drone strikes.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting road to travel. You give the authority to, I don't know, there was a movie called Stealth where they actually had an autonomous drone and it decided to go rogue and start taking out the good guys and not the bad guys. So this is one of those images of science fiction that have always been this way, that, you know, eventually the drones get a mind of their own and then they start turning on their creators. So, but luckily, we actually, in The Atlantic this week, ironically, there was a article about civilian safety crucial in the world of UAVs. It's talking about rules set up for autonomous drones, ironically.
Yeah, this is sort of timely. It's kind of an interesting article. I kind of take issue with some aspects of it, at least the sort of the basic presumption. But what the author has done is to list out five policy recommendations that would apply in these kinds of situations, that being unmanned aerial systems that are used by both military and law enforcement. And his objective for these policy recommendations is that we provide some kind of assurances that civilians will be safe and their privacy won't be damaged. So we have these five policy recommendations. The first one is that you apply the laws of war to unmanned aerial systems.
Well, that makes sense. I mean,
yeah,
they should be operated the same way you would operate any sort of weapon system. You don't want to do things like gas people, and there are rules in warfare. You know, and not a lot of times they're not followed, but technically, it's a good starting point that yes, it's an acknowledgement that a UAS or a UAV is a weapon and therefore should be used in accordance with the international rules of warfare.
Yeah, and you mentioned chemical weapons. In fact, that's his policy recommendation number three, is that you don't violate the Chemical Weapons Convention or the Biological Weapons Convention. Again, it you're trying to achieve the same objectives of, in this case, those conventions for chemical and biological weapons. And I think you're just simply saying that, you know, you apply these everywhere else. Well, they also apply to unmanned aerial systems.
Yeah. And surprisingly, number four was a fully autonomous UAS should respect the laws of war when used militarily and the liberty of citizens when used for law enforcement, meaning that you have to go to the trouble of programming the UAV, the LAR, as we discussed in the previous article, to follow the rules and the hierarchy of law, which says that, you know, you don't take out civilians. If you're going after a terrorist, you take that person out. And if there's children in the way, like what happened with our recent raid, you don't do anything and you return to base. So that's going to be real interesting, the program in that hierarchy.
Yeah, and there's also an accountability element built into this, such that if an autonomous UAS malfunctions and violates some of these concepts, the laws of war or the conventions that are out there, that you're held accountable, that a malfunction doesn't let you off the hook. You still have to satisfy the requirements.
Yeah, you can't blame, well, oh, well, the drone made the decision. It wasn't my fault. You as a human being are ultimately responsible for the actions of that machine that you created, which makes perfect sense.
Some of the other policy items in here include, you don't violate the Constitution that's applicable. You don't violate domestic and international laws that are applicable. It also talks about respecting international law and country sovereignty. All of these together, I guess you can't really make an argument against them, but they're all items that apply to other delivery systems, right? Whether it's an F-22 or a submarine. We apply these things to all those. And I guess I was left a little bit, wanting, because this is kind of simply saying, well, we apply these to unmanned aerial systems as well. And to me, that's kind of an obvious thing.
Well, it may be obvious to you, but it might be not obvious to other people. This made me think of one of my all-time favorite authors in science fiction, Isaac Asimov. And basically, if you're going to apply rules to robotics, you might as well apply his three rules to robotics, which are, one, a robot may not injure a human being or through an action allow a human being to come to harm. Two, a robot must obey the orders given to it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. And three, a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second law. If we go ahead and implement those three rules into LARs or autonomous robots, there's going to be no robots shooting human beings.
Hey, we're covered. I've been waiting for years. I've been waiting since I was a little kid when I used to read Asimov and first became aware of the three rules of robotics and came to understand that they really do cover almost every situation in a proper way. So if we're talking about LARs, well, let's just take those laws that we've already had for many, many years and apply them there. It makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a nice universe that Isaac made for us, but I don't see that happening, because even in Isaac's universe, there were ways to get around the three laws.
Yes.
And he played with those ideas also. But bottom line is, I think basically on this subject, we should defer to the expert. And he may not be with us anymore, but he sure as hell made a lasting impression. So we'll leave it to Asimov to say, you know what? He had it right. And basically those three laws are what people should live by when it comes to robotics or drones.
Very good. All right. Well, we've talked about the X-47B quite a bit lately and its success landing on a carrier and some plans to keep that program going. And they've been recognized for some of the things they've accomplished, haven't they, David?
Yeah. Popular Mechanics, that magazine that we all grew up reading because it had cool stuff in it, wrote an article, 10 Inventors Who Changed the World in 2013, and the breakthrough award was the U.S. Navy's Unmanned Combat Air System Demonstrator, or UCAS-D, the X-47B, calling it the Navy's smartest jet. So it looks like Popular Mechanics has decided putting a drone by itself on an aircraft carrier is a pretty cool thing.
I love the way they described the credit they are giving to the Navy and the X-47B. They say that these brilliant engineers, designers, and dreamers captured our imagination by creating swarms of smart rescue robots, cars that drive themselves, and a rugged rover that could change the way we think about exploring the red planet. That was another winner of the award. And these are the breakthrough award winners. So it's an interesting list. I, sometimes when magazines have award lists like this, you kind of look at them and think, you know, maybe some of them kind of make sense and some of them seem kind of like a stretch. But I have to say that these 10 innovators that receive this award really represent some fantastic thinking, some creative stuff that's coming out. And it's kind of nice to see the X-47B amongst that crowd.
Yeah, and, you know, we did put a drone or a couple of drones on the moon. I mean, Curiosity is definitely a self-autonomous thinking robot. And, I mean, yeah, you could call it a drone, but I think a lot of people don't realize how pervasive independent thinking technology is becoming. And I think that's why it's a good thing that we're doing this, to show that there's more to it than just aircraft or drones shooting terrorists in foreign countries that you don't really know of or can pronounce. That there's a lot of good stuff coming out. And this is another one of those articles where Popular Mechanics is giving where credit's due, and there's a lot of stuff. Cars that drive themselves, that's autonomous technology. Autonomous stuff, so yeah. So I think we're good there. So we definitely want you to check out that article. And then our next concept, a mother hen and chicks.
Friendly chicks.
Friendly chicks. That's right. I missed the friendly, not friendlies chicks, friendly chicks.
Yeah, this comes from a Canadian company, Equera, I guess is how you pronounce this. And they're proposing something they call SQEQQ, which is a concept where you have a, quote, mother hen, which is an autonomous UAV, a Delta Wing UAV, and it's loaded up with, quote, friendly chick UAVs that can be deployed into their own individual missions. This whole thing designed for autonomous operation. It's an interesting concept.
Yeah, I like, well, I guess a couple of weeks ago we did talk about drones driving drones and carrying, well, the naval technology where we're going to have the sub that's going to launch its own drone, the undersea one. But I got to give them credit. This is, and I think you agree with me, Max, the longest run-on sentence in the world.
Yes.
And that is the...
Take a deep breath before you get started now.
All right, ready? Here we go. The SGEQQ unmanned vehicles would be designed to collect data from the atmosphere, surface, and beneath the sea ice that scientists and researchers are unable to find, understand, and learn the Arctic region in depth and conclude their findings, make available these findings to governments, agencies, policymakers, and developers for them to understand and gain a better knowledge to make sound decisions on both the Arctic environment challenges and sustainable economic development while preserving the culture and social way of life of the indigenous people of the regions.
First period.
In addition, using these vehicles for Arctic exploration, these UAVs could be used for various other missions, including combat Arctic wildfires, oil spill cleanup, and operations in the Arctic to go and fight wildfires worldwide. It's a jack of all trades, I guess. It's going to be the ultimate UAV, and it is kind of neat.
It's like the Swiss Army drone.
There you go. It's a Swiss Army drone. Although, being that they're Canadian, I'm not sure they're going to be happy with that.
Okay.
But it's kind of like there's a lot of times in science fiction, you see the thing break up into a little thousand little pieces and they all go off their own little ways. And so it's coming to be that you've got a mother chicken that drops off all these little chicks, and they run around, perform whatever little individual tasks they have, and then return to the mothership, and they all return home happy and provide the governments, agencies, policymakers, and developers to understand that whatever they've brought back to them.
Yeah, to me, this is an example of creativity and just imagining what might be possible. And I think that's a characteristic of where this whole industry is at this point. Certainly, there are some specific applications, hardware and software that's designed to accomplish something specific. And then there are lots of dreamers out there, like this company, it would appear, that are imagining what might be or what could be. And proposing to explore the feasibility of those things. So it's really hard to say at this point if, like, this particular example, this company is going to ever produce something at all, or if they just remain as an, you know, initiator of a concept that's then taken by others and developed and commercialized, or if it's just a dream that this sort of dies on its own at some point and fades away. You don't know. But that's what's one of the things I think that's exciting about this industry at this time, is that all these things are out there, and you know, almost everything is possible.
Yeah, the future's wide open. Or to hark back to my 80s days, the future's so bright I've got to wear shades. It's pretty neat. One of the things that I've really enjoyed, we talk about it being wide open, is I'm always a fan of concept art. I have always been a fan of concept art. And we're getting a lot of concept art in this industry, you know?
Yes.
People just, you know, there's nothing better than somebody making a futuristic looking car that just, you may never see the light of day, but sometimes those drawings just suck you in. For the drawing they had for this was pretty cool. It's like you see this little wing and it's got little holes for these little drone helicopter things. And it's just people thinking beyond, you know, letting themselves enjoy the process of thinking a process through or visualizing something. So this is definitely one to check out, and we'll have to keep an eye on it, because, you know, we secretly like chickens, evidently.
Yes. And, you know, one other thing occurs to me, David, which is just briefly that, as you know, over on the Airplane Geeks podcast, we talk a lot about, or hear a lot from, people who aspire to some kind of a career in aviation, and they're not certain how to do that, or if becoming a pilot is what they should do, or get involved in other areas. And I think that this industry, the unmanned portion of the overall aviation industry, just has so many opportunities, and especially for the young folks who are interested in a career in aviation and have some ideas and want to become entrepreneurial or get involved in some, you know, very early thinking at the start of an industry. The opportunities are really kind of limitless, and so I think this is, as we say, a great time, especially if you're young and starting out.
Yeah, we missed the prime, but we're going to enjoy the ride, and maybe as we go forward, we do need to sort of focus on that, because we've always been so good about focusing it on Airplane Geeks is employment and jobs and showing the roles that people are getting involved with. Speaking of roles and time, I think basically we've come to an end, unfortunately. God, this goes so quickly.
David, we've been getting a lot of really interesting listener mail, with all kinds of questions, all kinds of activities that they're involved in. And we want to thank everybody for sending that in. But also, maybe we should devote in an upcoming episode some more time to commenting on some of the things that our listeners have been sending us.
Yeah, actually, yes. And we want to keep encouraging that. We're getting a lot of interesting emails and people sending us stories now, and We're getting kind of overwhelmed, and we're trying to keep this a 30-minute podcast. So maybe next episode what we'll do is we'll focus on you, the listeners. We seem to be getting them left and right, and we really appreciate what you've sent to us. And so I think that sounds like a good idea, that now that we've got our first 10 episodes under our belt, we'll start off for the next 10, and we'll start off talking about stuff you sent in. So in the next week, if you get us in, remember, it's feedback@theuavdigest.com, and send us, or as we've always said on Airplane Geeks, make a recording and send us a listener mail. So we look forward to that. And Max, where else can they find us on the internet?
Well, of course, there's the website, which is theuavdigest.com, and you can listen to the episodes there or read the show notes. We also have some photos, usually, of some of the vehicles that we've been discussing. Also, we're on Twitter @UAV Digest, and our Facebook page is also UAV Digest. And let's see, we're also on Stitcher. If you go to Stitcher.com, you can stream us right to your mobile device.
So I guess that'll be it for this week, folks. So next week, it'll be all about you, AVs. And we'll talk to you next week. This is David in Philly.
And this is Max in Hartford. See you next week.